Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
All right, guys, this is a Thunder and Lightning exclusive here. I decided to bring on one of my college friends. There's a few people that might know who he is, but I just thought it'd be cool to talk to him about some Drumline stuff at East Central and the great football teams that we got a chance to watch back in the day. This guy's kind of started a new hobby over in Nashville. He's playing some bars and things like that, picking his guitar. Michael Hardy, we're proud to have you here on Thunder and Lightning. I've been scrolling through Instagram lately. Every time I scroll on Instagram, I see my algorithm has picked up Hardy, I guess. I have a new podcast that you're on. I guess you got a little time to talk. This podcast isn't quite Theo Von or some of the other. I saw you were on a Supernatural podcast or something the other day talking about ghosts.
Yeah.
This isn't quite that, but I know you've been wanting to get on this podcast. You can't lie about that.
Oh, dude, I've listened to every episode of Thunder and Lightning now for I think 2 years, dude. I'm a fan. This is like the highest honor for me, dude.
We're gonna have to get you on the Rumblings at some point.
Come on.
First of all, fresh off a trip to Gainesville, you couldn't bring home a win, but what was it like seeing the dogs in Gainesville last week?
It was fine till you know when. I mean it was cool. We watched the whole game from the sideline, and man, it just it's one of those that just you wonder why some plays get called when they do, and that's just one that I don't know if I'll ever know why. And I'll leave it at that. Lebby's become a pretty good buddy of mine, and a lot of people over there, so I don't want to be too outspoken or just really I believe in the program, and I just that's one that I can't let myself go on a rant. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but I don't know if I'll ever be able to understand that that last play. But
welcome to our world.
Yeah, I know, I know how you guys feel with that. You're journalists, though, man. That's what you do. I'm just kind of like, I'm over here just like, man, I want to scream and yell, but I can't. But man, it was a really good time. I'd never been in the swamp. It is cool here. See him walk back down that's cool. Like it's one of those where you just got to go and see it in person to really get it. And it was very cool. Everything except for the very end was a great time, really.
Well, I brought you in. This interview is more for me than anything, because I love talking music and life and all kind of stuff, and I don't get a chance to do that much. That's why the Rumblings is probably my favorite thing every week. And so, really, I kind of want to get into the mind of Michael Hardy and see how it works. And knowing you for so long, I mean, it's almost been – it's been over 15 years since you and I first met at band camp.
Yeah.
In Decatur, Mississippi. You were on the baseline. I was in the pit.
Yeah.
And you and I had a lot in common. We had a lot of the same musical taste and things like that, but it still always blows my mind to see how far you've come and the direction that your life took, because I always knew you as a very musical person, but I never actually pictured this for your life. And that's the cool thing about it is you kind of made it. You made this your life. And one of the things I want to talk about was these tours that you've been going on lately. You started off, I remember a few years ago, you're playing Rick's, which is kind of crazy. You're playing Rick's with Morgan Wallen.
Yeah.
And to see where you are now, him too, is really insane. That kind of speaks to Rick's too, how they're able to kind of see the talent before it really gets to where it is.
Totally.
But these two headliner tours you've been on, how crazy was that? You ended the tour at Madison Square Garden. And then last year you're playing Duty Noble and some cool atmospheres like that. I mean, how crazy has this life been the last couple of years for you?
It's been pretty wild. It's like the new, I mean, you know, when you, I've been touring now for 7 years, which is crazy to think that that much time has gone by. So, you know, it, unless you blow up overnight, you know, if you have a kind of a normal every year is a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger. You get slowly acclimated to it, and that it's not lost on me how cool like playing the garden and stuff is. But man, I have to check myself probably once or twice a year and just sort of look back and what the last quarter or the last year has been and take a moment and be like, man, this is really cool. And so, yeah, you asking me that is, that's a good reminder. But yeah, dude, it's crazy. I mean, it's every single year I think about, those final kind of moments in Mississippi before I moved up here and just how different things are and how much unknown there was and kind of like I think what you were sort of getting at is like I moved to Nashville to be a songwriter and I had no intentions of being my own artist. And then once I started doing the artist thing, I really had no idea that I would kind of, dip my toes into like the rock and roll scene. And anyway, it's been a wild ride, man. But it's fun to look back and just to sort of see where everything has gone and all the twists and turns that I had no idea were gonna happen.
One of the things I admire too is like you're such a big family guy. Like, and I know family is a big part of your life. Actually, your dad was the first Hardy to be on this podcast. We talked to him at the fair. We couldn't get you, so I said, I mean, can we get the number one? Can we get Big Mike? So we got him at the fair 2 years ago, and we talked about your upbringing, kind of where you come from, and all that stuff. So I know family's really important to you. Madison, your sister, who's super talented. I remember her years ago and how talented she was. You brought your grandmother on stage with you, Brandon, your wife and your daughters on tour with you a lot. Just how important is that aspect of your life and to involve those people, I guess, in the day to day for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's super important. Your family, I mean, for me, I love them to death, but they just keep me grounded. I don't mean this as in like they're not the ones that are like, they don't keep me in check more than like they keep me grounded. And when I'm with my family, I'm not, I would pretty much say I'm not like who I am on stage. I don't have the full, it's the same way that Eric Church puts on the sunglasses and then he becomes Chief. I'm very different off stage and I'm very very much just at home with my family. And so I love to keep them around and keep them close because I think it's healthy to not go too far into the don't believe your own hype all the time. It's like Jekyll and Hyde a little bit or something like that. But I just think they keep me grounded. And they make me feel like I'm home and that I'm safe. And yeah, it's just, I think that's what it's all about. And it's been fun. I mean, having a baby on the road is different, man. And like we work late nights and so hearing that cry at 7:30 in the morning, which when you're not really going to bed till 2 or 3 and doing that for a weekend can be a little tough, but it could be worse also.
Couple of fewer shotguns the night before.
Yeah,
You have
for
to keep that in
sure.
mind.
Oh, definitely. I mean, Callie knows that she's taking the morning shift usually, and I'll take the midday shift. But yeah, you start thinking about that second or third shot before you go on stage, or maybe even after the show, and start thinking maybe it's better to just drink a bottle of water or two instead
Oh
these days.
yeah, no, I totally get it. I got a 6-year-old, and then my second one was, I think, maybe 2 months after yours. So
Okay.
what's life like for you as a girl dad?
Man, I love it. I can't imagine having a son now. Like I really it's hard for me to even think about having a son. It's just so cool having a little girl. It's just the coolest thing in the world. And we're only 7 months in, so I know there's way more to come. But Griffin Burke very well, and Griffin obviously has his second is a little girl, and he we talk about it a lot, and he's like, dude, there's just nothing better. And she's like, he said she's like. Well, I think she's about to be two, but he said, dude, that from like year and a half to 2 year old age is like the best. He's like, she's having a little girl, it's the best thing ever. So I'm looking forward to it every day.
It's the best. I had to relearn how to do all the baby stuff because we're 6 years apart.
Oh, dang,
So,
dude.
yep, I had to figure all that equation
That's
back out.
tough.
Hey, but
Everybody.
it's like riding a bike. I'm right back in the game.
Yeah, but it's been what, 2 or 3 years since you changed the diaper and stuff like that?
Oh yeah, it's been a while. Mine was my first daughter. She got potty trained during COVID, so she was like a year and a half too. My wife was like, "I'm going to get her out of this," and
Yeah.
so she was like very early. I have no this one, our youngest. She's very dependent. She likes to cuddle. Like, I have a feeling this is going to take a while. So
They always
hopefully not.
say the advice that a lot of people, because they're like, how many kids do you want? And we're shooting for like three, four if we have a happy accident, kind of thing. But they're like, just don't start up, like don't start over. They're like, keep they don't all have to be in diapers, but they're like, as soon as you have one around 2 years old, start trying. Just keep stay in the
Yeah.
cycle so that when you're done, you're done. So I feel your pain, man. I couldn't imagine 6 years going by and then having a second one. It's got to be different to be kind of starting over a little bit.
It is. It's awesome though because you have, I mean, she's helping out and I mean I don't feel like I have two babies.
Yeah,
So
no doubt.
that's been cool. We talked about our time at EC and I remember you at that point being kind of a you were straight edge. You were listening like we were listening to just like Day to
Yeah,
Remember,
man.
3 Days Grace, like that kind of stuff. I know that you're a true blue redneck. I know that you have roots in country music, but when did you really realize that you were going to be a country music guy? And and maybe that's not a label that you put on yourself because you seem to be kind of a chameleon, but like when did you realize that was the direction you were going to go as a singer-songwriter, as an artist? You were going to go in that genre. Like, how did all this come about?
Man, I didn't really kind of have that moment until after I had already moved to Nashville. I was in my first year at MTSU, and I there's like a moment where I was like, dude, if this is country music, then this is what I want to do. And it was when I heard Homeboy, Eric Church has a song Homeboy, and I heard it on the radio driving to class one morning. And I was still, at the time, like I was writing these songs, it just didn't sound like anything, and it was just there. It was like incubator songs, you know what I mean? It's like I was still like figuring it out and trying to figure out like how to write a song and what my thing was going to be and my sound and all that. And man, there's just something that struck a chord with me with that. And I had already been like a big Eric Church fan, but I didn't know I didn't know what I wanted to do with my music yet. I really had not figured it out. And for whatever reason, man, I heard that song and it was like something changed in my brain chemistry forever. And I just, it was like the mix of like how rock and roll that song is, how specific of a situation that song was. So, the song is about like talking to your brother who's like kind of gone in a bad way and is, doing some bad things. And, but also like crafting a hook the way that he did, where it's like it talks about homeboy and then it's like, come on home, boy. Like everything about the song, it set a fire under me. And I was like, I want to write songs like that for the rest of my life. And it just, so like everything that I feel like I have written has been sort of that was like a big bang for me, if that makes sense. And then my creativity after that, everything is just in my mind been sort of a variation or just a soundscape or whatever of that moment. That was the moment that I was like, okay, if that's country music, I can do that because that is sick. That's
Yeah.
where it
So
started.
when you're in Nashville and you start to get going, when I go to Nashville, I'm very much a touristy guy. I know it's for some people it's becoming kind of a sin, but I go to Broadway. I love going into all those bars and just listen to people. I will just go sit and listen to people play music.
Yeah.
I was walking down, I forget the name of the bar. But it was during the SEC tournament, and I went in there, First, I was walking by and I heard a very familiar riff. And you know this riff if you hear it. It was Walk by Pantera.
Yeah.
And so I was like, hold up. And so I walk in there. I was in that bar just sitting by myself for 2 hours listening to this band. It was a three-piece band playing Limp Bizkit, Pantera. Like I was in heaven. And so there's people like that up and down Broadway. Like they are there trying to make it. What was your Nashville story? Did you have that experience? Did you get your foot in the door, writing music early? Like how did I've heard you talk about the quit on the napkin story, things like that. I mean, what was your Nashville story?
Man, mine basically, long story short, I went to MTSU, but I was my last 2 years at MTSU, I was I commuted from Nashville. So I was in Nashville and I was just like writing songs with people and writing a lot of songs by myself. And a relative of mine who is a publisher in Nashville, who I had known him my whole life, and he's a relative of he's first cousins with my grandfather, which is so random. But basically, growing up my whole life, I knew that I had this super cool songwriter, publisher, music person in my family, but I had only met him like a couple of times. Long story short, I had been putting these songs on my Facebook, or like putting songs on YouTube and stuff like that. And he eventually wrote me on Facebook. I think he wrote on my Facebook wall back when that was still, like a thing.
Did
And
he poke you?
yes, he poked me and then wrote on my wall. And he said something along his name's Dennis McCoskey. Anyway, he was like, "Hey, Michael, didn't know you moved to town. Come by and play me some songs sometime." So I did. This was probably 2012. And I went to his house. I played him a bunch of songs that I had written, and really, long story short, he was like, "Okay, I want to kind of take you under my wing and help you kind of learn how to write songs and get better." And so a couple years later, he had a publishing deal lined up for me with like a joint venture deal with this company. And long story short, at the right in the like last minute, they bailed that this company bailed on the deal, and it was right after I graduated college. And so I immediately went from like, "Oh, I'm about to sign a publishing deal like right out of college. This is amazing," to like, "I don't have a job out of college." And long story short, a couple of weeks later, I wrote a song by myself that ended up coming out on this last record I just put out called Dog Years. And I sent Dennis Dog Years, and he went back to this company and he was like, he wrote this song by himself. And that's kind of usually like, sometimes when people write, you write songs with other people, a lot of times you don't really know who's sort of toeing the line, and a good, it's just always good early on to write a lot of songs by yourself, because there's pretty much like, if they're good, if you're good or you're bad, there's no denying it if you wrote it by yourself, But long story short, this company was like, "All right, let's sign him." I signed that publishing deal. My salary was, a lot of people don't know this, but was $1,000 a month. And I was on that deal for 3 years. So I was broke, but I was writing songs, and I didn't take another job. I lived like a homeless person, literally, for 3 years with a publishing deal. And did not nobody recorded a single song of mine. So basically what that means is like I get paid to write songs with people in hopes that they get pitched to these artists, and hopefully they record it, and then hopefully they take it to radio. And if they take it to radio and then it's a hit, then you make a life-changing amount of money, and then you're kind of off to the races. Well, that didn't happen for the first 3 or 4 years of my publishing deal. And then right at the beginning of my next one, this is probably 2016, maybe 2017. I would say it's probably early 2017. My publisher calls me and is like, "Hey, do you want to write with this new kid that just signed with Big Loud, named Morgan Wallen?" And I was like, "Sure, have him come over to the house or at my apartment, and we'll just write here." So the next day, this little skinny dude pulls up to my house, and anyway, we wrote a song, and it was not even a song that ever got released. But that we struck up a friendship. And about 6 months later, I wrote a song called Up Down and I sent it to Morgan Wallen, and that ended up being my first number one. And then after that, kind of all hell broke loose, and I had gotten in the Florida Georgia Line camp because of that, and wrote a bunch of songs for them, and God's Country happened around the same time. It went from like no 8 years of having no success to I think in 1 year I went from getting no cuts, meaning like nobody recorded my songs, and then within 365 days from my first cut, I ended up getting like 40 or 50 in a year, and it just kind of went crazy for a while after that.
Did you know Morgan whenever y'all met? Did you know of him? I know he had been on The Voice or something.
Yeah,
Did
I
you kind of
knew
know
him
about him?
because when he came over to the house is when The Way I Talk had just died at radio. People don't know this either, but that song was a kind of a flop at radio. It died at like number 30 on the radio chart. But just with his success, it's obviously massive now just because of how big he is. But that was his first single. And it actually did not perform well at radio, but I knew that song, and so I was like, man, this song is sick. Like this, I like his voice. This is a good song. So I was like a fan. So when I got the call to see if we wanted to write, I was like, yeah, absolutely. But still, never knew. I mean, a couple of years later, I'm on tour with him, and like he's having great shows. But there was just no way of knowing how big he was gonna be one day. It was just it still blows my mind, but there was no way to predict that. Like, it's hard to explain, but like, he's a great singer and a great entertainer. His band is awesome, but there was just sometimes I just think it just happens to people, and you just, for whatever reason, they were the chosen one, and that's exactly what the world needed or wanted at the time. So, I couldn't, I, you know, I knew he was going to be a star, but I had no idea he was going to be the biggest thing ever in country music. It's pretty crazy.
So, on the idea of your songwriting and what that process, you sat down with him. I know y'all still have writing sessions, and you have other people that you write with too. But there's so many different ways to approach writing a song, and I've heard it from so many different artists. What's your process? How does a song does a tune pop into your head and you put words to it? Is it the other way around? Does an idea pop into your head? How does that process work for you?
Usually these days it's very, so I don't want to undermine the process, but it's a very industrialized process these days. You know what I mean? Like, we're not going into a dark room and lighting candles, and we're not all talking about what we're going through in life or like what's going on in the world and then writing a song based off that. It's really truly, songs get written a thousand different ways, but I would say that like 90% of the time, you and a few other professionals go to what they call a producer writer, like we call them a track guy these days, and their house, and they've got a little studio set up. You can't see it, but I have one right here, and it's just a little studio set up, and that person has created 20 or 30 just vibes, whether it's a guitar loop, I mean, anything you could imagine. If it's a crazy drum beat, if it's an entirely produced track, like whatever it is. And in the midst of you guys sitting around drinking coffee, they're just sort of thumbing through these vibes. And while you're doing that, for me personally, and I just feel like most of the time, it starts with an idea. So like the idea is the first thing that happens. And somebody will just say, I've got this idea called so and so. And basically some people, you kind of go in a circle, right? And a few ideas get thrown out, and 90% of the time, the best one is like everybody's like, oh, okay. That's the good idea in the room. Let's write that. And then you just start from the beginning, and I swear it's like putting together a puzzle. And but the melody, like the tune, that always just sort of comes after the lyrics. Like, it's the idea, and then somebody will just sort of sing a melody, almost like freestyle a melody with like, lyrics that sort of pertain to the idea. And then you just sort of, you take that line and you put that here, and then maybe that line ends up being better for the second verse. So you move it down here, and then somebody has a better idea for a first verse. And it's just people throwing out lines, sitting in a room, sort of bobbing their head while there's a track guy these days that just kind of is working on the track the whole time. It's a really cool process to watch, but my buddy one time described it, once you get the idea, described it as watching grown babies try to talk for the first time, because it's like, you know, like it's right there on the tip of your tongue, like what you need to say, and your wheels are turning, but you're kind of mumbling through it, sort of trying to get it out, and then you get it out, and then, you know, everybody's like, yeah, that's it, and it's just that 20 times until the song is done. But to me, idea is number one, because you just, the idea has to come first. Yeah, I hate writing towards nothing. Like, I'm a big craft guy, and like I love the craft of writing songs and make sure every line counts and everything is pointed towards the hook. And so when you don't have an idea, it's like taking off on an airplane and not knowing where you're going to land, like having no idea where you're going to land, you know?
One thing I really want to talk about, I loved your first real full album. I loved your stuff you had before that, kind of your EP stuff, the early, what I call the OG Hardy stuff. I was a real big fan of that stuff. I loved Rednecker, 4x4, all that stuff. But you come out with a Rock, which I thought was an incredible country album. And you're kind of hitting your stride there, and then you did this whole Mockingbird and the Crow concept, which personally I love because I'm a fan of your rock side of things, and it felt like such a, like, I don't want to say like a middle finger to that stuff, but it was kind of like, you don't tell me what I'm gonna be to the industry, which I thought was like incredible. Tell me about the process of putting that album together. I remember you put out an Instagram video at one point playing Sold Out, and I like that really blew my mind that you had transitioned from country to that kind of stuff. And then you had an entire album that was kind of right down the middle, country and rock. What went into that album, making that album, and that whole concept of the Mockingbird and the Crow?
Man, the biggest inspiration, I guess, for that album was my fans, because I put out, let me think about the order. Boots was the first song. I have a song called Boots. That was the first song that was very rock forward, at least that I think. I know a lot of the stuff kind of always was. Like, there was even a lot of stuff on that first Hixtape record that was like Turn You Down and stuff like that. There was a lot of rock stuff on there, but Boots was a song that I specifically remember. Like, I put it out in like April, and by like the middle of the summer, it was the biggest song in my set, and it was that by far the heaviest song. And I just remember thinking, like, man, this, because, and that song was what I felt like was like the, it was like the truest song to me. It felt like the most natural. Like, I felt like I was really coming into my own with the song like that. And so I say all that to say that the fans, they were the indicator of like of me giving me the courage to like fully lean into the rock and roll thing. And so after Boots came Sold Out, which was another step. And this was still like, I'm kind of writing for this record, but I didn't really have the concept yet. I'm just writing songs, and a lot of rock songs are kind of falling out. And then, man, Sold Out ended up being like the biggest song of the set. And so, you know, before I knew it, I was like, man, let's really lean into this rock thing. And yeah, you know, ironically, I basically had, I don't remember how many songs are on the record, but let's just call it seven country songs and seven, maybe it's eight country songs and eight rock songs written for this record, or somewhere around there. And I did not have a concept or a title. And it was not until the very end. I was fishing one day on the Cumberland River in Nashville, and I know you, growing up in the South, you've seen this 100 times, but I've watched a mockingbird flying across the river pecking at a crow, because he was probably, you know, whatever he was doing, digging in his nest or something. But have you not seen that probably in your life all the time? Either a crow or a buzzard. And I just, for some reason, pulled out my phone and I wrote the Mockingbird and the Crow. And at the time, I didn't even know, it didn't hit me about like this dichotomy of, you know, country and rock and all that. And so the record was done. I'm out on the road. I brought two of my buddies out on the road to write with me, and my buddy picks up a electric guitar, and he plugs it into his little rig, and he starts playing this riff on my bus. And I was like, hey, we're not, I'm not doing that. Like the record's done, dude. We're not, I'm not writing any more rock songs. It's just right. I think like Jason Aldean was in the studio at the time, and I was like, let's write some songs for Aldean. And man, that last day, like the third day of that run, late one night, I was like, you know what? I do have this song or this idea called The Mockingbird and the Crow. And we just sort of started talking, and I was like, you know, I don't really have a concept for this record. Maybe that's like the thing is like, you know, country is the mockingbird and the crow. Anyway, so a lot of people don't know, but that was the last song for the record. And so the concept that kind of got written at the very, very end. And man, I wouldn't have it any other way. It tied it together perfectly. And, you know, I mean, that song is all, or that album and that song in particular, you know, I've never had a lot of trouble with my record label or my management or anybody with telling me what to do. Believe it or not, they've been super supportive. And I think a lot of times that, or I think a lot of that song is really more of a an internal struggle with like, you know, wondering how far I should push the boundary, and wondering if I, you know, if I want to be proud and stay true to myself and really push the boundary, or if I play it safe and stick to the country thing. I don't know. There's just a, it's a lot of like the kind of an internal struggle with that song. But man, it's that album still to this day, I really do think in 20 or 30 years, people will look back, and I think that hopefully there will be more, but that will be one of my, that'll be my Back in Black, you know. That's kind of my cornerstone moment, because I think it really introduced everybody to really who I was as an artist, and that I can do both, you know.
Really amazing concept. And the song itself was amazing because it starts off as a country song and it's kind of got that, you know, vibe to it. And in the middle of the song, you can feel the energy change into that rock side. And it goes into the rock part of the album. Like, it's amazing that you say that was the last thing that you talked about because it
Yeah,
fits so
I
perfectly in the
know,
middle
dude.
of the
We got
album.
so lucky. Like we got so lucky with it because it was, you know. And when we wrote it, I was like, oh, this is okay. Never mind. I'm an idiot. I was like, this is the idea. This is the perfect transition. And it happened to work out like that, man. I got super lucky, but it did. It kind of turned it into a piece of art or something, man. We just got lucky with it coming in at the very last minute.
I listened to that song. I think it came out at like 11 or midnight, one night, and I really had no idea what to expect. But I had to listen to it 3 times. It was amazing.
That's awesome.
The last time we spoke in an interview setting was in your hotel room in Omaha, across the street from the ballpark. We did a story. You had just started to really take off as an artist. And one of the things that you were setting up that year was going to the Neshoba County Fair, and that was like kind of a bucket list item for you. You're 2 or 3 rows away from the grandstand growing up, and that's a place where you grew up over there at the Neshoba County Fair. But I know another cool thing that you were able to do, maybe a bucket list type item, was playing Duty Noble. And you weren't the first person to play there, but you were the first to have that kind of concert, a big blowout, and, you know, people in the outfield, the stands filled up, things like that. That's a concept I have been begging people to do at Mississippi State for a long time, specifically with you. How did that all come together, and what was kind of your experience with that, playing at Duty Noble and, you know, playing in front of Mississippi State fans at a venue like that?
Well, I owe a lot of that to my booking agent, who actually went to Ole Miss, believe it or not. But I had just been telling him for a long time that I wanted to play. Really, it started at the Hump, and last year was a really big year, and he was seeing a lot of just good projection, and as a good booking agent does. And he called me one day and he was like, "Dude, I think instead of the Hump, you should play the baseball stadium." And I was like, okay. And man, yeah, it was sort of started out as an idea, and it came to life, and it was awesome. I, you know, If I went back and did it again, I wish that we could have played on the original day, because the hurricane, I remember it was it a hurricane that came through? Man, it blew a bunch of stuff around and it was a little crazy, but it was the coolest. It's the coolest show I've ever done. I can confidently say, like, that's the coolest show I have ever done, coolest venue I've ever played. That nothing will come close to that. But man, yeah, it just started as like an idea, and he really wanted me he really advocated for us to try to make that happen, and we did. And I would do it again in a heartbeat. It was so fun, such a special thing. And man, I grew up going to baseball games, as I'm sure you did too. My dad would sign me out of school, second, third grade, for years, and we'd go up and watch home games, and so to just have such a like a full circle moment is insane. Really cool.
Yeah, it was awesome. You've dropped some names in here. Eric Church, Jason Aldean. You wrote God's Country, which is one of the biggest songs in the world, with Blake Shelton, and that was your song and something you'll always be able to kind of stamp. But you've had all these other artists that you've had a chance to work with. You had Lainey Wilson kind of starting off with you. Steven Wilson is incredible. He's the next man up. I've been so impressed with him. Morgan Wallen, like you said, what's it been like just getting a chance to rub elbows with these people and sit around? I saw you playing with Eric Church the other day, playing some, I think it was like Stone Temple Pilots or something. What's it been like just getting a chance to know these people and learn some things from them too?
Man, it's really cool. The cool thing about country, and I've done some stuff in the pop world, and a lot of those people are there's a lot of people that are very nice, Post Malone being one of them. But it seems like in the pop world there's a lot of like larger than life. But man, in the country space, they're all just normal. They're just people. They're just so normal. Everybody is just so normal, and it just feels like when you're working with these people or whatever you're doing, that you're just there's such a common thread of like, man, we all grew up together and all had a very similar just upbringing, whatever that is. But the coolest thing to me about so many country artists, especially the ones that I've been able to look up to, like Luke Bryan, Dierks, Blake Shelton, Keith Urban, they are extremely, extremely kind. And that is, to me, like, that's the best lesson or mentorship or whatever you want to call it. Like, that to me is the number one thing that I take away from being around those people is how kind they are, and how they really go to bat for like the younger generation, which makes me want to do that. When I meet somebody or a kid that moves to town that's a young artist and he wants to work with me or even meet me or whatever, and just to pay forward the kindness that those people show me, and do whatever I can to help the next generation, because that I cannot stress enough how much my mind was blown at just how nice everybody has been. And it's just that's my favorite thing about the Nashville community, especially in the artist space, is it's awesome.
Kind of bouncing off of that, I wanted to ask that one of the things we haven't really talked about is the Hicks Tape stuff,
Yeah.
and that's some of your best stuff. Like when you look at, I mean, she went to Jared, or he went to Jared, came from there, right?
Yeah,
And
sure did. One
ain't no
Beer
place
was
like,
technically a Hicks Tape song. That was my first
there
number
you
one.
go. Ain't no place like Hometown, which has gotten really popular in at Mississippi State. They play it all the time
That
and
used
have
to
a
be
place.
Luke Hancock's walkout song.
It got real big in 21 when they won the title. How does that all work? How that process work putting those together and the kind of speak on the Diffie album too, getting a
Yeah,
chance to do
yeah.
that with Post.
Man, the first Hicks Tape started just, man, it was a perfect storm of like, I had just that Hicks Tape Volume 1 came out in 2019. I had just, it was my first like full or like 10 song thing. It was bigger than an EP, and I had just come off of 3 or 4 years of like writing with a lot of artists and really getting to know people, and so that started as just a bunch of texts and phone calls, and I'm just like, calling people and just being like, yo, I've signed a record deal and I'm doing this thing, and like, here's this batch of songs. Here's the song I'd love for you to do. So and so's in, so and so's in, this person's doing it. I mean, just kind of plugging myself. Like I felt like I was out on the street corner selling, candy bars for my baseball team or something. But dude, and people just, people were into it. And I just, we kind of looked up and was like, damn, we have the feature list. Like we're done. And it turned into something really cool after that. And it just, Hicks Tape was born. And the next record, I didn't sing on every song, which I think was cool. I think that just introduced the concept of like, it's a mixtape, and I'm not going to be on every song, but it's just, they're all like fun party songs and this and that. And then, yeah. So then, the Joe Diffie thing happened. Obviously Joe Diffie passed during COVID, and, my manager just had a great idea to do a Joe Diffie, and all of those recordings are all the original recordings. His son Parker, basically, for lack of a better term, in Joe's will, passed down his master recordings to his son, which he gave my record label permission to use. So all of those vocals are obviously his original vocals, and we just took them out and put, had Toby Keith sing on a song, or Blake Shelton, or whoever it may be. And man, that's one of the coolest projects I've ever been a part of, because I got to spend a lot of time with Joe's son Parker, who is like, he's such a trip. But he got to share with me at a party that like, this was a huge part of his family's healing, was like hearing their dad's voice again, and like, and just that was just a big part of their process for really saying goodbye to him. And that, to play a such a small part in that, and such a important, cool, part of country music history, with Joe Diffie being as big of a success as he was, was really cool. So yeah, the Diff tapes are awesome. I don't know. I haven't, Hicks Tape Volume 4 hasn't been talked about in a while, so I don't know where we are, but we're gonna have to get on that pretty soon. And we will. We'll get to working on that.
Yeah, I love those, man. I love that the whole Diffie album was awesome. Parker was on a song or two of those too, wasn't he?
He sang on, yeah, he did. He sang on, I think it was called like Life Had Plans or something like that. It was one that I sang on, and I think he sang a bunch of harmonies and stuff on it too. But yeah, he did. He sang on it.
How cool. That's so awesome. Brand new album just came out. I'm very proud of you, but there's been a few times I've been really jealous. You showed up in a WWE ring one time. I was really upset about that. And the other time was Triple H tweeting out your album the other day, which just like, I'm a total mark for wrestling. So like that stuff, it just like, I'm jealous. I'm more envious than I am proud. But I am proud of this album too. It's a really, really good album, front to the end. And I know you're getting set for another tour as well. What's kind of next for you? I mean, what are you kind of building right now? Do you have another album you're building behind the scenes? Are you focused on this tour? I mean, you seem to be like constantly going. What's next?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've been writing some songs, but just to write. But I don't know. I haven't figured out what the next thing is yet. This was very much intentionally like a country record with like a bunch of songs that could sound like they could be on the radio type of record. And that, as you know, is kind of a little bit different than what I've done traditionally. I don't know. I'm never going to leave the rock space. I'm never going to leave the country space. So I'm just sort of constantly always finding the way to navigate that. And so I have no idea what's next. I've got some other weird projects that are kind of always on the back burner that I need to sort of get back on. Some stuff I'm really excited about, I can't really talk about, but different kind of alter ego kind of stuff that I've got in the works as well. And I don't know, I've got a record label now, and I got a band, Sicarus, which I know we talked about that the other day, who I think is awesome. And I'm really trying to work with those guys and get them to take flight, because they're really good. And gotta be a dad, to be a family man in there. So there's a lot going on, there's a lot to navigate. But my wheels are always turning about what's coming next, especially after I put once a record is done, like my that creative, like whatever thing I was in is gone. Like I push that over and I'm like, okay, what's going to be the new thing? And so I hadn't figured it out yet. So hopefully within the next year or so, we'll get it dialed in.
We need some more covers. I need we had Blurry, we had you done Plush, I think, from
No,
Stone
Big
Cold.
Empty, Big
Big
Empty.
Empty, that's right,
Yeah.
which I love. We need some more covers.
Yeah, we did. We covered Love It If, let's see, Love It If We Made It. It was a 1975 song.
Yeah.
And that was in my set this year. I do a cover every single year. So I've got to figure out what song I'm going to cover, and I'll be putting that out too, because I do a cover for every single tour. We do something different. So I got to figure out what it is. It's tough. Covers are weird, man, because it's like you want it to be cool, but it's got to be, for me, it's like it can't be too cheesy. It's got to be like the perfect song. I don't like Foo Fighters always did such a good job of picking their covers, because they were always
Yes.
tasteful, and like you're like, damn, that's such a great song. They did it really good, and I just try to follow in those footsteps. But the cover will come. Well, we're gonna figure it out.
I thought Blurry, which I said when you put it out, this is Michael Hardy at his core.
Yeah, no
This
doubt.
is old school. This is Michael Hardy teenager. You know, like this is Michael
100%.
Hardy in college. Like it fit to a T.
Yeah, dude. I mean, that's the most fun. That's the most fun I've ever had singing a song. Of all my songs that I've sang now, over 100 or so, Blurry was by far the most fun, no doubt.
So, with that said, like, what do you kind of consider your major influences in music? You know, and it could be local people that you grew up with, or the music that you listen to. I mean, who's your biggest influences?
Well, I mean, I owe my dad. My dad is the guy that introduced me to rock and roll. By you know, he pretty much forced it upon me at a very young age, which I'm very thankful he did. But his stuff was, you know, it was classic rock, and then up to probably around the time that he was doing it, which would have been the mid-90s. So just any of that, you know, he wasn't a big Nirvana guy, but he liked Pearl Jam, and I think he you know, STP and all that. That was his jam. And then around the turn of the century, when nu metal became a thing, that's when I would say that's when he passed it to me and just let me take it and run with it, because that wasn't really his thing. But
He wasn't a big Korn and Limp
not a
Bizkit
big
guy.
Korn guy, no. But Kid Rock, even that Devil Without a Cause record was super revolutionary, and it stuck with me. All the nu metal stuff. And I mean, I've said this before, but dude, anybody that in the moment says that they weren't a Creed or a Nickelback fan is a, they're a lot, they're a complete and total liar. They can say it now after the fact, but I guarantee you they were all listening to all that stuff. And I was the biggest fan. All that stuff, man. And then on into the years where you and I knew each other, and it was like 3 Days Grace, and Shinedown was really big then, and Breaking Ben and all those guys. But yeah, I mean,
Day
you
to
know, so
remember.
much rock and roll. Yeah, Day to Remember. So much rock and roll. And then, you know, really on the songwriting side, like Eric Church, Brad Paisley were two like big influences with their writing. But from the writing side, I didn't really start like digesting and paying attention to that stuff until I moved to Nashville. And honestly, the songwriters were the ones that were more inspiring to me. So like guys the world has never heard of, but Rodney Clausen, Casey Beathard, Craig Wiseman, just these guys that like they wrote. If you knew the songs they wrote, you'd be like, damn, they wrote my favorite songs on the like country songs that I've ever heard. But it's those guys, it's their voice, you know, it's like they're the real writers. And so they were the really big inspirations for me as from a writing perspective once I got to town. But all that music stuff, man, it's all me and you are we're neck and neck on that kind of stuff, dude. That's weird. We have the same taste, and that stuff heavily influenced me for sure.
I saw Creed twice in the last year. I was taking advantage of it all. I saw him at Brandon Amphitheater, and I saw him in Memphis earlier this year.
With Tremonti
My
still, he's still with him, right?
who?
Tremonti, still playing
Tremonti? Oh,
guitar player? Yeah.
yeah.
Sick.
The whole band's together,
Yeah,
and
so good.
the show is it's the best show I've ever been to. It was a spiritual experience, and I'm not joking. Like I was closing my eyes, raising my hand like I'm at church.
Dude.
And I knew every word, I knew every song, and I felt like I was 10 years old again. I'm like,
Yeah, dude.
that's, you got to sing on stage. I mean,
I did,
all
yeah.
right, there's the other part I was envious
Yeah,
about. You got to sing on stage with freaking Scott Stapp.
dude. He
Nuts.
they said that they were coming, they were playing in town, and asked if I would sing a song with him, and my manager was like, "Can I connect you with Scott?" And I was like, "Yeah." And so he texted me, and I said, "Send me the set list." And Weathered was on the set list, and I was like, "Weathered, 100%." And plus, I didn't. I was like, "Dude, I'm not gonna sing One Last Breath or Higher." Or, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not gonna take that away from you guys, man.
Yeah.
That was moment. Plus, Weathered to me is just, I love that song. So, yeah, did Weathered with him. It was crazy. I was super, super, super nervous. That was one of the few times that I like got really nervous because I just didn't want to screw up the lyrics. But we got through it. It was good.
Awesome. All right, we're gonna get out here with this one. What is your top three songs that you've ever written?
That I've ever written.
And it could be, I mean, let's keep it within your catalog. Let's
Okay.
not go with God's Country
Okay.
or Up Down. What are your top three favorite songs? And it could be your favorite songs to perform or the favorite songs you've written, but what's your top three? Putting you on the spot, but every Tuesday I get asked these questions. What's your top three Hardy songs? That's what I get asked.
Okay, number one is A Rock is actually my number one favorite song I've ever written.
Okay.
Number two is The Mockingbird and the Crow. And number three is Wait in the Truck. Yeah.
That's three bangers.
I
You
mean, I
nailed it.
could go like Truck Bed or whatever, but that it's those three are songs that like from a writer perspective that I'm proud of, so
Yeah.
for sure.
No, that's great. I told you in 2021, my favorite song off that album that you that the your first album was Hate Your Hometown.
Oh yeah, man.
And I don't even know if you ever really play it, but I love that song.
I played it 2 nights in a row, and I was so out of breath after doing it that I cut it from the set and we never played it again.
I tried to play it one day and I was like, "Dadgum, man, I can't even breathe."
Dude, it was so brutal. And that was back before I used to not warm up. And I do now, so I could probably get away with it now. But man, back then I was like choking on stage, and I was like, we're not doing this anymore.
Man, Michael, I cannot tell you how much I appreciate this and you coming on and giving your time so generously. I've been wanting to do this, for a couple years. I'm glad we finally were able to get it. I'm so proud of you, man. I'm your biggest fan. I've listened to everything you put out. So, I mean, it's awesome to see you doing this. Michael's going to be on tour Country Country in April. Is it April you're coming to Tupelo?
Let
It's
me.
during baseball season, I know.
I don't have my. Oh, I do have my phone. Let me
Yeah.
see.
I think it's the Tennessee weekend. State's playing Tennessee in baseball in April, and Michael's going to be at the Cadence Bank Arena in Tupelo, I believe.
Yeah, April 10th, it looks like.
Okay. So if you don't have your tickets, you got to go see Michael Hardy
Yeah.
in concert. Incredible show. I've been to two or three to this point. I'm going to try to get to another one, but I appreciate you, brother. Great to talk to you.
Yeah, you too, man. See you next time.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.